Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. One word. That's the difference between what the Massachusetts House and the Senate want to see passed on abortion. And that word? Severe. Clock's ticking. Legislative session ends in just 12 days. Now, we're reckoning with a post-Roe world at the state and the federal level. And in fact, joining us now on the line, Massachusetts Congresswoman Lori Trahan, who has just stepped out of a hearing on the reversal of Roe v. Wade in D.C. Congresswoman Trahan, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Oh, thank you for having me. Good morning, Tiziana.
Good morning. You've called the Roe reversal the defining issue of our lifetime. So much has happened just in the last few years, Congresswoman. Why this one?
Well, I think when the Supreme Court officially overturned abortion protections guaranteed by Roe v. Wade just over 3 weeks ago, so many of us called that decision disastrous. But in the time since then, it's proven to be exactly that for thousands of women in Republican-controlled states who saw their rights that they and their mothers have cherished for the past 50 years stripped away. And while we're fortunate to call Massachusetts home, a state that has always and will always stand up for a woman's right to abortion care, we've seen a number of reports in recent days that prove we can't just be content with that. Extreme anti-abortion groups are encouraging Republican lawmakers to stop talking about abortion as a state's rights issue and start plotting a national ban. And Republicans are taking their marching orders. So while we have the Roe Act and other key protections here in the Commonwealth, anti-choice Republicans are targeting states like ours next.
So what is more disastrous than you would have anticipated in the last few weeks? We knew this verdict was coming down, at least in theory, for a while. There's been much public discussion for several years now, especially as new justices were being appointed to the Supreme Court, of what could come our way. What has caught you by surprise?
Well, I think the decision is written by Clarence Thomas, right? I mean, we know, and on Thursday, we're going to take action to establish a constitutional right to birth control, something that none of us ever imagined we'd have to fight for in 2022.
So just to clarify for listeners, you're talking about his concurring opinion where he raised the question of whether some other key cases, including ones that protected the right to contraception, marriage equality, potentially even interracial marriage, might need to be reconsidered. Sorry for interrupting.
Absolutely. And later this week, we'll pass legislation that would enshrine the Marriage Equality Act for same-sex and interracial couples. So we're not just going to stand by while an extremist minority tries to undo decades of progress and take away the rights of millions of Americans. And that's why the House of Representatives took up and passed the Women's Health Protection Act last week, legislation that would guarantee the right of every woman in America to access the reproductive care they need. But there's many other issues caught in the crosshairs post-Roe, and we're taking action on that as well.
Congresswoman Lori Trahan with us from Washington. Will that pass? Will any of that pass in the House and the Senate?
Well, right now, I think all eyes are on the Senate. Certainly, you know, we were able to pass the Women's Protection Health Act out of the House, and all eyes are on the Senate. I mean, look, this is the defining issue of our lifetime, of our generation, and I think it's one that we're all in together. I don't think that this is going to be a fight that we win overnight. I think people are understanding right now that elections matter. We need to win in Ohio and Pennsylvania, those Senate races. We need to return Maggie Hassan so that we do have a pro-choice majority in our Senate and in our House of Representatives.
So you raise an interesting and tense point. There are predictions that it's possible that Democrats could lose the House and the Senate in November. And of course, Roe v. Wade has already been overturned. Other states are already taking action. My question to you is there something that could be passed in this House and Senate before the midterm elections in November, before Democrats, you being a Democrat, run the risk of losing their majority, that would be acceptable to you?
Look, I think right now everything is on the table in terms of what we can do to protect the rights that we've had as women in this country for over 50 years. And certainly, thinking on a longer term horizon, what we need to do to secure those majorities, to make sure that we are holding a Supreme Court that has frankly lost its legitimacy, accountable for these decisions which fly in the face of popular opinion, that fly in the face of what we've come to cherish in terms of rights for women, for same-sex marriage, for access to contraception and in vitro fertilization. So I think in the very, very short term, our heads are down to figure out what we just passed in the House, what we can pass in the Senate before this election, and then also rallying that public support around the country so that we build up our majorities that are for protecting these rights, for expanding our progress as a country, not for taking rights away.
And I'm sorry to stay on this a little bit longer, but is there something that you think could get passed in the Senate?
I do. Look, I'm always optimistic that there will be, an opportunity for people to, for the Senate to hear the cries of the American people. I think with every story right now that we're hearing and the hearing that I just stepped out of, around the horror that is happening across our country, in Ohio, a 10-year-old girl, not much older than my youngest daughter, became pregnant after she was raped, denied abortion care in her home state, forced to travel to Indiana to terminate a pregnancy that she had no say in and no control over. In Louisiana, a woman who had just miscarried was forced through a painful hours-long labor to deliver a non-viable fetus. She didn't want that, but the hospital lawyer said she had no choice. As these stories come to life, we have to use that as momentum to fix what the Supreme Court just rolled back on women across the country.
I'm going to play a little sound for you here, Congresswoman Lori Trahan. Representative Ayanna Pressley was with us. We did a special show the day the decision from the Supreme Court was released, and she talked about what she wanted to see done moving forward. Here she is.
We have to employ every tool available to us at every level of government until we enshrine and codify abortion care, health care, as a constitutional right, as it has been for the last 50 years before this Supreme Court obstructed the will of majority of Americans and overturned it.
We have more women in our congressional delegation and in the Senate here in Massachusetts than ever before. Are you all in lockstep on this? Does Congresswoman Pressley represent your thoughts and feelings there too?
Absolutely. Look, I think when she says every level of government, it is really important that people understand who they're electing. I mean, Ayanna and I, Congresswoman Pressley and I, we came in together in 2018 in a wave of electing more women who would set the priorities of what Congress and Washington was going to focus on and preserving our rights as women so that we're not rolling back and being treated as second-class citizens. It is important to make every candidate who is running for every position, you make them make it discussable. I mean, look, there were a lot of us who said after the draft opinion became public a couple of months ago that no option should be taken off the table as we work to reverse this disastrous decision. In my opinion, that applies to parliamentary procedure in Congress, like getting rid of the filibuster, and that applies to checking the balance of a Supreme Court that's become little more than a political weapon for right-wing extremists. I mean, we voted in the House to codify women's right to abortion care, and we've done it three times. I support eliminating the arcane and useless filibuster to pass that legislation in the Senate. And we should vote to rein in the power of the Supreme Court so no more nominees feel like they can sit before the Senate, lie through their teeth under oath, and then get confirmed to a lifetime appointment on the bench.
So you're saying that you feel that Kavanaugh and Coney Barrett lied during their hearings?
Yes. Shame on the senators who were snowed by them. I mean, I think that there are a number of ways to hold the Supreme Court bench accountable. It's my hope that we're able to take up a proposal or a suite of bills to hold those justices accountable to what they say under oath.
So I want to bring it back home here to Massachusetts for a little bit for you. There's a debate here. So you're in the 3rd District, which represents, for example, Lawrence, Chelmsford, Lancaster. You know we're having this discussion at the state level as well. Massachusetts has strong abortion rights codified into law already, but the legislature in the remaining days of this session seeking to do more. And the sticky wicket between the House and the Senate is this idea of severe. So the bill, the new bill that the House has under design, would allow abortions after 24 weeks in case of severe fetal anomalies, which is different than now, where it's fatal fetal anomalies. The Senate has balked at that, saying that there could be, for example, as argued by disability rights advocates, moves to abort fetuses who are viable but have severe disabilities. Where do you come out on that, and where do you want to see our legislature come out?
So first of all, let's just start with how fortunate we are to have leaders here in Massachusetts who recognize the need to strengthen abortion protections following the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe. There are millions of women in Republican-controlled states who are watching as their leaders are doing the exact opposite, actually stripping away the rights they've cherished for the past 50 years, and looking to go even further than the bans that they already have in place. I think the legislative package put forth by the legislature, in combination, you know, with the governor's executive action right after the decision, is critical in protecting women's right to abortion care and shielding care providers from being penalized by draconian laws from other states. Now, I know that they're working through a few minor differences right now, and I fully expect them to reach an agreement on that legislation, just as they did when they passed the Roe Act, which has been critical already in protecting our reproductive care. So look, we have a pro-choice legislature and the most pro-choice legislature in the Commonwealth's history, and that shouldn't get lost in the conversation over a single word in a legislative proposal that will enshrine stronger abortion rights than pretty much any other state in our country.
In our remaining time, I'd like to shift gears. We originally were talking with you about appearing last week on the show, and then you very publicly announced that you had COVID. First, I want to ask you, how are you? How are you feeling?
Oh, thank you for that. I feel much better. I really do. I'm back in Washington, and I'm happy to be here.
So I know that your daughter also tested positive, and I have to tell you that struck a chord with me because my daughter and I did at the holidays and wound up isolating together, which was a combination of miserable and wonderful. So how was isolation for you?
Well, it was busy. She had a very different idea of what isolating was going to be like than I did. But in between hearings and committee meetings, I did get to play pie in the face, which, if you don't know, it's when you get whipped cream in your face. And she was elated that we were able to quarantine, you know, together. But yes, it had its ups and downs for sure.
I am so glad my daughter did not know about pie in the face when we were isolating together. All right. Before I let you go, one other thing. I know you're well aware that on Thursday night there will be another primetime hearing on the January 6th insurrection. What are you watching for and hoping to see out of that hearing on Thursday night?
Well, look, I fully expect that Thursday's hearing to follow along the lines of the prior hearings, right? This is the committee has been conducting a serious bipartisan investigation focused on finding the facts. And from the first couple of hearings alone, it's obvious that there was far more to Donald Trump's plot to overturn the 2020 election than any of us knew. Detailing, you know, the assault on the U.S. Capitol, the violence inflicted on police officers simply trying to do their jobs, and the goal of these dangerous extremists who took their orders from the previous president. I think the committee's done a good job taking politics out of the equation with these hearings. And while I don't have any special insight into what we're going to see, I fully expect it to be another gripping display of the facts they've uncovered. And I'll just say, as someone who was watching, waiting, and wondering why the National Guard wasn't deployed immediately, I look forward to getting to those answers about what exactly was happening in the Oval Office during those critical hours. So I know I'll be watching, and I expect that millions of Americans will be as well, just as they have been for the previous hearings.
So it's a little personal for you, too.
Absolutely.
So last question, are your constituents watching? Have you heard from the people you represent that they care about and are paying attention to these hearings?
Yeah, look, when I go home and when I'm, you know, in my district talking to folks, right, there, first and foremost, I mean, there is hardship in families who are just struggling to make ends meet. But I do think that in the background of all of that is this, you know, the Supreme Court reversal of Roe v. Wade that has really traumatized so many families because it's a rollback of rights, and also the threat to our democracy that we need to shore up, we need to prevent that happens again. I mean, I hear about all of that when I'm home, and I do think people are watching the hearings. They want to understand what exactly happened that day. They want to make sure that we get history right so that it's never repeated again. But certainly, you know, when I'm home, and the thing that I'm most focused on right now is how do we alleviate, you know, the rising costs for folks back home, and how do we keep money in families' pockets at a time when they need it the most?
All right. That is Massachusetts Congresswoman Lori Trahan, who represents the 3rd District, which includes Lawrence, Chelmsford, and Lancaster. Congresswoman, you stepped out of a hearing in D.C. to join us this morning. I appreciate you doing that. Thanks for your time.
Oh, you bet. Thanks so much.